Last week, Michigan put new requirements in place that may affect the health of hundreds of thousands of people on Medicaid. The new rules call for people under 63 who are on Medicaid to work or lose coverage. Kate Massey is the state Medicaid director with Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services. Kate, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Can you set the context for us with this? What was the intent of the new rules?
Sure. So the intent of the Healthy Michigan Plan was really to test whether or not tying Medicaid to a work requirement would lead to better outcomes and results for Michigan's Medicaid beneficiaries.
And these were enacted under Governor Snyder when Republicans were in control of the legislature, correct?
That's correct.
Right. The new rules state that non-exempt people between the ages of 19 and 62 have to report for 80 hours of work every month to continue to be eligible for Medicaid. How many people does that cover?
So there are about 670,000 individuals who are currently receiving services through Healthy Michigan Plan. We expect that about 240,000 individuals will need to comply with these new work requirements.
And what kind of work must they do to continue being eligible?
So there are a number of activities that people can engage in order to comply with the law. One is, of course, kind of what we consider to be traditional employment, but there are other activities, including looking for a job, being a student, such as pursuing a GED high school diploma or college diploma. And some of those education-related activities can also include job training and vocational training.
Now, this may be a little bit in the weeds, but obviously details can mean a lot in individual cases. What do people have to do to substantiate that they are following the rules?
So a lot of the rules really rely on the notion of self-attestation. So after individuals comply with the new requirements through any combination of the activities that I was just describing, they need to report either by phone, online, or in person to indicate that they have complied with those different activities. And then we also encourage people to save paperwork to the extent possible, such as W-2s or other indications of these type of activities, should they be required to prove their activity at the time that we engage in an audit.
And how long do people have to show the state that they are indeed making the effort and showing up for these work activities?
So the requirements indicate that beneficiaries need to report on a monthly basis. So, for example, if you engaged in 80 hours of activity in January, you have until the end of February to report those activities. And that needs to occur every single month for the duration of these requirements being in effect.
Kate, Medicaid users tend to be a population that experience real challenges. When Arkansas made a run at work rules for Medicaid back in 2018, a period of months went by, and some 18,000 people lost their coverage. Some admittedly because they got into jobs, but others because they didn't know about the change or were confused by the new rules, or maybe didn't have cell phones or had other problems navigating the system. What can Michigan do to make sure that hard-to-reach folks do not fall through the cracks?
Sure, and that's really important. When we look at Michigan's Medicaid program and the people who are subject to these requirements, we are concerned about the potential loss of coverage because by our estimates, if we were to look at states like Arkansas, which you just referenced, we think that up to 100,000 individuals might lose coverage, which we want to avoid at all costs. When we look at states like Arkansas or New Hampshire who have had a bit more experience in engaging in work requirements, there are several lessons learned that we incorporated into our Michigan implementation activities, and those include making sure that there are multiple ways for beneficiaries to report. So that's why I was emphasizing online, phone, or in-person reporting so that there are multiple modes of engagement. We also wanted to make sure that we were expanding our outreach and education activities. So, for example, through the fall, we had over 20 regional forums. Those were regional in person throughout the state of Michigan, as well as virtual forums so that we could engage providers, health plans, and other stakeholders who will be interacting with our beneficiaries. And we also wanted to simplify our communications. So the letters that we've been sending out throughout the fall really boil down the call to action by using with simple language, large font, bright colors, and very direct asks.
During the course of those forums, when you were asking the providers and people on the front lines, what can we do to make this work? What were some of the takeaways? You mentioned, you know, that bright signage, so to speak, would be really important.
Right. So what we've been doing throughout the fall is really making sure that we hit the messaging at the appropriate level. And so through those regional forums, what we found was that people were hungry for educational materials. So on our website, for example, we make available different types of posters, booklets designed for beneficiaries and whatnot that really kind of explain these pretty complex requirements. And those educational materials were developed in conjunction with different partners who are really attuned to what we call behaviorally informed design, so that we really take a look at how the beneficiary is internalizing and interpreting the message. The other thing that we've done is we've actually, through different focus group testing, have kind of taken all of these really important messages and make sure that people understand what we're trying to communicate.
Let's say someone gets a job and maybe even gets a job and moves off Medicaid. People who work in low-wage jobs can sometimes experience a lot of mobility. If you lose a job, can you then start over from square one with the work rules, or is the clock still running from your last period of unemployment?
So just to make sure I'm kind of tracking the conversation correctly, because there are different ways to comply with the work requirements, employment is not the only one. So you are essentially on a continuous clock to the extent that you are eligible for Medicaid via the Healthy Michigan plan. So if it's employment, that's one way to comply. If you lose your employment, you technically still are on the clock and you can engage in looking for a job or, like I said before, kind of going through training or kind of educational pursuits in order to make sure that you maintain your coverage.
Right. And you just need to do the diligence with respect to those other alternative activities to show that you're making an effort.
That's right.
If someone stands to lose their Medicaid coverage, I imagine some lack of care might cause real problems for people's health, maybe even be life-threatening, yes?
We are very concerned, yes, that any type of disruption in coverage could risk beneficiary outcomes.
Is there anything in place either at the provider level or at the state level to try to catch people who are falling through the cracks?
Well, we're partnering with our stakeholders as well as our partner health plans to make sure that that situation is avoided. So we are coordinating by sharing data about people who are at risk of losing coverage, exactly who those beneficiaries are, so that we can try to reach out to them to prevent that situation from occurring.
Aren't some people on Medicaid already working?
Yes.
They would already be covered, right? They would not lose their coverage as long as the salary requirements were not changing.
Well, and as long as they report, right? That's a key component to the work requirements rules, which is if you are in compliance, we, the state, the Medicaid agency, need to know that. So they need to continue to report their good behavior through the monthly reporting.
The leaders who put these work requirements into play had several different outcomes in mind, and some of them might have been behavioral, some of them might have been to stave off the use of emergency rooms when primary care is really what's going to keep health costs down and lead to better outcomes. Might the state save money as the result of the work requirements?
So we are very interested in what the results of the work requirements will be, what the impact is to access, to coverage, and what type of results will materialize. What we are doing is partnering with the University of Michigan to evaluate what the implications of work requirements will be, to see if that scenario that you've just described actually comes to fruition.
Right now, there's a trio of nonprofits in a lawsuit with the U.S. government claiming that the work rules aren't appropriate and go against the mission of Medicaid. And there's a separate lawsuit in federal court in Michigan also challenging the rules on behalf of plaintiffs who are on Medicaid. Is there any reason for people to think that they should wait to see what comes out of those court cases?
So we are obviously actively tracking the results of those court cases. Until the courts have had a chance to evaluate the case, there's been no suspension of the work requirements that's been issued. And so we are in a go-forward approach. I will say that both Governor Whitmer and Director Gordon have asked the legislature for a delay as a way to make sure that there's continuous coverage, as well as to avoid wasting taxpayer dollars on implementation of a program that may be suspended. But the legislature has deferred on that option.
Well, Kate, is there anyone on Medicaid right now who does not have to follow the new work rules?
Yeah, there's one element that I think is really key for work requirements, and that is that there is a list of exemption categories for people who are subject to these requirements that I think is really important to highlight. There are actually 12 categories of exemptions. I won't go through them all, but they are available for viewing on our website, which is at michigan.gov/healthyMIplan. But if individuals are, for example, pregnant, taking care of a person with a disability or a child under the age of 6, if they're a full-time student, or if they're medically frail, which is to say that they face challenges to complying with the rules, they can pursue an exemption at any time and then be removed or excused from these reporting requirements that we just reviewed this afternoon.
Well, Kate, thank you very much for talking with us about this today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Kate Massey is State Medicaid Director for Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services.